Hello and welcome to the PCOS Nutritionist Podcast. If we haven't met yet, my name is Claire. I'm a registered nutritionist and I also have a background in exercise science and natural fertility education as well. But most importantly, I specialize in PCOS because I have it too and I know how frustrating it can be, especially when you don't understand what your body is doing, why it's doing this, why you're getting these symptoms, why you could be eating the same as everyone else and or what you've always done before and yet you're putting on massive amounts of weight in a very short time and just, you know, strange symptoms like that that just don't make sense. So that's really my specialty, is trying to figure out why that's happening. You know, there's always a cause. It is in PCOS, our genetics aren't just quite reacting well with our lifestyle, the way we're eating and the exercise that we're doing and how we're sleeping and moving. And even if that is healthy from a outside perspective, you know, even if you think, well, actually, I feel like I am living a healthy lifestyle. I certainly feel like I'm a lot healthier than many of my friends and family, but yet why am I getting these symptoms? There's always a reason for that. So generally in PCOS, it could be that your insulin blood glucose isn't working well, your stress hormones, your thyroid, you've got chronic inflammation, or other conditions that are compounding that as well. So my role is really trying to get to the bottom of what those problems are, and then how we can modify what you're eating and how you're moving to work with that and try and kind of reverse those other root causes or things that are going on for you. So that is what we do, and that's what we do. Either I do the same whether I'm working with women one-on-one or in my program, the PCOS Protocol. It's exactly the same process, just brought to you in a different method depending on what your preference is. So today's guest, Helen, is someone who I actually met through that program, the PCOS Protocol. So I think this episode is going to really resonate with those of you who have been like, okay, I'm not interested in the fertility side of PCOS. I've done that. I've had my babies, or maybe you don't want to have babies at all. But I know I talk a lot about fertility because that is what my book's all about and that we're going to be releasing in a couple of months' time. But it's not the only thing that we do, right? Like, I don't actually care what you want to achieve, whether it be energy levels, whether it be I'm super moody all the time and I want to just have more like balanced mood, or hair's falling out, or hirsutism, or acne, or weight gain, whatever it is, the process is exactly the same. It's identify that root cause and then identify what are the things that are going to have the biggest impact on you. What small changes can we make to your lifestyle that are going to have the biggest impact? So Helen is 43. She's from New Jersey, and she actually found out that she had PCOS after her first miscarriage. So she'd never known before then that she even had PCOS, what it was. She'd been on the pill for almost 20 years, came off it, got pregnant by the second month, and then miscarried. And after that, she didn't get her period back for 6 months, right? And it was during that time she was referred to a reproductive endocrinologist who then diagnosed her with PCOS. But it was so interesting for her because looking back, she had these symptoms from when she was quite young, but no one had ever put, you know, the acne, the really irregular periods, irritability, hangriness. No one had ever put that together for her and be like, huh, I know what this is. This is a condition called PCOS. And also, here are the underlying issues that are going on for you, which is something that you'll hear we identified for Helen in the program. So, really interesting, and especially for those of you who are, you know, working mums or moms during COVID, exhausted, I think that Helen's story will really resonate with you in terms of that. A big part of that exhaustion is not just, please don't put that down to just being a mum, right? Like, yes, there are definitely components of that that is due to not getting enough sleep, always having someone or something demanding of you and your time, but there is also a massive component, which is how is your insulin working and how are your stress hormones working, and are they actually contributing to the extreme fatigue that you are experiencing? So have a listen to this, and I hope that her story resonates with many of you out there. So Helen, thank you so much for joining me today. I know that your story is going to resonate with so many women, other type A personalities like you and I. But before we get into all of that, because it's going to be fantastic when we do talk about that, but can you just take us back a little bit to when you got diagnosed with PCOS, when your symptoms started? Maybe they started before you got diagnosed. What was going on? And yeah, just a bit about your background.
Sure. So I got diagnosed very late. I got diagnosed when I was 37 and had a miscarriage at about 6 weeks. And then I never got my period back. And so, you know, month one goes and month two goes and month three goes. And I called my OB and I'm like, what now? It's been 3 months, no period, can't keep trying. And she said, all right, let's do some tests. And she did some blood tests. And I think it's the FSH to LH ratio was 2:1.
Yeah.
And she said, has anybody ever diagnosed you with PCOS? And I said, well, what's that? And I said, no. And she said, look, don't take this the wrong way, but I know you're really looking to, you know, start, and given your age, you should probably go see an infertility specialist. And I said, okay, give me a name. I'm going. So we called and I made an appointment, and we went in and he did an ultrasound and checkbox 1, 2, 3. I had all the criteria for PCOS. So, polycystic ovaries, high androgen levels, as a child. And I'll tell you, so this really started when I was 11. So wow. I had acne from 11 to 37.
Wow.
So it wasn't cystic acne, like I had to go on Accutane, but it was pretty up there, like I'm on the border. Yeah. My chest, my back, my face, everywhere, my shoulders, you know, the mood swings, the aggression, the hair loss. I didn't have weight gain, and I didn't really have the hair growth on my body or you know, extra on my face or anything, but I had no periods. I would actually get, my periods would be induced by my OB every 3 months. Because some years I would get it 3 times a year and sometimes I would get it 2x a year or 6x a year. And back then they wanted you to bleed. So they gave you the progesterone pills and then you had your period and then see you in 3 months and we'll do it all over again. So I was on birth control for almost 20 years.
Wow. So going on that kind of progesterone one where they give you like the Provera and then you have the bleed, or were you kind of oral combined after that as well?
Yes. Yes. So that was when I wasn't on the pill yet. And then honestly, I would go to dermatologist after dermatologist and the dermatologist just said, please, I beg you, just go on the pill. It will make your skin better. So I was on Yasmin, and then I was on Yaz, and then I was on B-Yaz. And then finally I got off the pill when I went to go get pregnant. And I did get pregnant the second month. I did. Mm-hmm. And then so I was like, okay, great. And then, of course, everything came crashing down. Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, we did go. So I now have 2 children, but we did go the IVF route. So after the doctor sat with us and he said, look, we could go with Clomid and we can go with the, I forget the other oral one that starts with L. Yes, the other, it's more effective than Clomid. Mm-hmm. And then we can do intrauterine insemination and then, or then we can go to IVF. And my husband and I are like, we don't have time for this. He's 39, I'm 37. We want multiple children. What's going to give us the most bang for our buck? Like, I don't want to sit there and have miscarriage after miscarriage trying and then get there anyway.
Yeah.
So he said, okay, the IVF has like a 30-something% success rate, but that's going to give you the most bang for your buck. So we said, okay, we'll do that. So I started my hormones and then the nurse comes to you and goes over everything very, very quickly, but says everything's going to be okay. And by the way, you know, only about 2%, there's a very, very slight chance of 1-2% of people who have this ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome. Guess who's the 2%?
No.
So we go through that. And by the way, if you have PCOS, you are more prone to getting that.
Totally. Absolutely.
You are more prone. And they don't tell you that. They do not tell you.
And that's because the drug that they're giving you is luteinizing hormone, the one to try and stimulate ovulation, which, as you just said before, yours was high. You had a 2:1 ratio of LH to FSH. And this is also why those ovulation predictor kits don't work, because they measure LH, and in PCOS that's already high.
Right.
So they've got to be really careful with how much they stimulate you often. And so this is why, as you said, it's that ovarian, so hyperstimulation, for anyone that doesn't know, hasn't gone through fertility treatment, is basically when they kind of stimulate you to ovulate so they can collect your eggs, right? Like that's what they were doing in the IVF. Yeah. They're like trying to collect the eggs. But So they've got to do that enough to be able to, you know, get you to ovulate, but not too much that causes hyperstimulation syndrome. So for that, what sort of symptoms did you develop from that?
So then once I started to develop it, I was going in for daily blood draws and ultrasounds. And I just started accumulating fluid,
right.
lots of fluid. So at the end, I ended up having almost 2 liters of extra fluid that needed to be drained with an 18-inch needle. I ended up getting very dehydrated, and I actually started to, because it was like pushing up into my lungs, I started to get shortness of breath. Mm-hmm. And I mean, everything was fine after they drained me, of course, but you were walking around as if you're literally 4 or 5 months pregnant. That's mm-hmm. what you look like. That's how much fluid you have. So, you know, we got through that drama. We froze the embryos that they were able to get. Plus side of PCOS, you get a lot of embryos.
Yeah.
So that's the only plus side. And then we had to wait, and then we did the insemination, or not insemination, but the the implantation. We did it 2 months later. We waited. Right. They let my ovaries calm down and everything. And luckily for us, we actually went the extra step to do the pre-genetic testing on all of the embryos. So that kicked about 50% of them out due to my age. Mm-hmm. But we did come out with a successful pregnancy, and my son was then born 5 years ago.
Amazing.
And we did repeat that again. You know, we froze them. We repeated it again almost 3 years later with my daughter, who is now 2.5. So at the end, it was a happy story. But back to when they diagnosed me with PCOS, and I said, well, what is this? They're like, oh, it's okay. You know, just, you'll be fine. You just need some help getting pregnant. So then I went, put my little researcher hat on, and I like to read about everything. So I started like looking for books and what is this? And I mean, at that point we were going through with it anyway, but I found this book on a natural way of, and I don't even remember who the author is, of healing PCOS. And it was a lot of the similar things that you've implemented, but kind of obviously all in one shot, because it's a book. So I got rid of dairy. I got rid of gluten. I kind of had a paleo-like diet, I'll say. I didn't have any children or anything at that point, so I had all this time to exercise, and I was exercising 5 days a week and doing yoga and doing Pilates and doing some spin. And I, you know, weight wasn't an issue, but I lost weight, and my skin literally cleared up in 2 weeks, and I have never had a pimple again.
Wow.
I mean, literally dairy, like when you say dairy, I have not eaten dairy since then, because when you are tortured by acne for 26 years, you never want to have that again if you've gotten rid of it. So that was kind of my journey of starting PCOS. Now, as much as I learned, my reasons were to have a baby. That was my mm-hmm. why at the time. Mm-hmm. It's not the best why, as I've learned, because when you do that, you're not doing it for the long term, and you need to be doing it for the long term, because whether you're 18 or 25, or 30 or 50, you're going to have this. And that's one of the big takeaways I think I took away from the protocol, is this is forever. And mm-hmm. I really need to find a way to adjust my lifestyle and adapt it so that I'm a whole person, and not just for the purposes of someone else or for the purposes of having a baby, because now I have those two babies. Now my symptoms were worse than they were before. And that's kind of what drove me to dig deeper. But you know, when I was younger, and there's so much, it's so interesting because you know, you talk about your gut. I was such a sick kid. I was on antibiotics all the time, all mm-hmm. the time. Because in the 80s, that's all they did was prescribe antibiotics.
Absolutely.
You have strep, antibiotic. You have a cold virus, antibiotic. So I was on penicillin and tetracycline and doxycycline for my skin. And you know, at that point I was starting to tell dermatologists, no, I'm not taking your antibiotic anymore. It doesn't work. And I will say that even as an adult, now when I need one, I have to take a very broad spectrum high dose because the other ones don't work on me anymore. And that's really sad, because I wish I would have had some of this knowledge before. You know, I think back to when I started seeing an OB, when I was a you know, late teen, and I first started having my period, and I was 18, and I saw the same OB for maybe I'd say about 15 or 17 years or so. And I remember asking her, am I going to have trouble getting pregnant? And I was only in my early 20s. It's not like I was ready to do that yet, but I wanted to know. And she said, oh no, you'll be fine. And then I was having recurrent yeast infections. And I said, should we maybe do some blood work, or should we look into this a little bit more? Oh, just eat yogurt 3 times a day.
Yogurt 3 times a day.
Yogurt 3 times a day. That's how you're going to get your probiotic.
What? Forever.
Yeah.
And I bet that was great. And that was great for the acne, of course.
Mm-hmm, of course. So, you know, there is not one doctor that has ever, you know, said you need to do X to get rid of your symptoms. And that, I think, was always kind of a frustrating part, because, you know, you're looking for help and you're looking for validation, and you don't really know what symptoms are PCOS or what symptoms are, I'm just really stressed out. Or I'm just, this is really going on in my life, or whatever the case may be. So,
These are actually connected, but it's not. So that, you know, for example, the yeast infections aren't caused by PCOS, but they're connected, right? Like if you have high blood sugar and insulin, then there's a lot of blood glucose there for your, the yeast in to feed on. And so that's pretty much what's happening with thrush. And then also too, if you're stressed, they thrive in that environment as well. We've got poor gut bacteria. They're going to really take hold. So, and all of those then affect your PCOS symptoms as well. So this is where, you know, taking a kind of a functional approach to medicine is so helpful, because we're taking all of those symptoms and going, okay, yeah, they're not necessarily all from this, you know, the same condition, but they are all connected. And we actually do need to look at you as a holistic being rather than just a silo, like, oh, I'm an OB, so therefore I deal with your vagina, which has got some thrush, and I don't look at your gut, or I don't look at your hormone levels and your blood work and see what your insulin's doing or what your stress hormone's doing, because that's not where I go. And also that's not what I have time for, because I've been given you a 20-minute appointment with you and I can't really do much within that time. So I'm just going to basically give you a pill that's going to fix your symptom so I can send you out the door and you won't complain anymore. And that's a really simplistic way of looking at it, but this is where our medical system is fundamentally broken. And we are just, you know, as women, we especially, because we tend to get a lot more of these chronic conditions earlier, especially like autoimmune conditions and stuff, we are being very, you know, a huge disservice to us, because we are not able to actually, yeah, we might not be dying in the next 2 weeks, but we're certainly not living optimally.
I totally agree. And I think because I didn't have the weight component as a symptom, that I was even more kind of brushed. But what was so interesting to me is that when I started making those changes and I went in for my appointment, they said, oh, you just ovulated. And I hadn't ovulated. And that was only doing it for 3 weeks. Like, and I had not been getting regular periods. So I knew there was something to this. I knew there was something to removing and doing some of this, you know, work. And then I did. So then, you know, we fast forward and I had my son, and then, you know, my OB said, please, you know, follow up with an endocrinologist. And so I did. And he did the standard tests. My HbA1c was 6.1, because it was only like 4 months after I had given birth. I said, I don't want to go on metformin. Give me 6 months to do diet and lifestyle, because I did not want. My father is type 2 diabetic. My grandmother was diabetic. There's a whole obese side of that family. So I was always very aware of the diabetes and the potential for diabetes. And I didn't want to go on those medications if I didn't have to. So I did do the diet and lifestyle. You know, my A1C came down to about 5.5, which is, by the way, where it stayed. Until now, I just got it checked. Still 5.5. And that was all they had for me. And so then I searched for another endocrinologist, and I tried to find one that specialized in PCOS if I could. And I did all this reading, and I went to see an acupuncturist for my insomnia, and I went to see my primary care physician, and I went to see a sleep therapist. And, you know, no one could help. And when I went to the newest endocrinologist, and she's like, all your labs are fine, your total cholesterol's fine, your fasting blood sugar is fine. And I said, but I just don't feel well. I have these other symptoms, these other mood symptoms. Like I'm irritable. I'm angry. I'm cranky, especially the 2 weeks before my period. And I guess the one other phenomenon is that, you know, once I did have my son, my periods returned and I was fairly regular. It took about 6 months for them to return, but then I was fairly regular. So then that kind of came back, and same after my daughter was born. But to this day, it was still, you know, just go and do this. So then, you know, I'm bopping back and forth between my OB, my primary care, my endocrinologist, trying to do what I can holistically. And then I finally went to my OB in the stress of having toddlers at home, trying to work full time. And I'm like, I just can't do this anymore. Something is wrong. Something is wrong hormonally that this is happening. It's got to be connected to the PCOS. You know, and she gave me a script for Lexapro, which I took because I needed something, and it did help a little. But then after 3 months, I started to notice I'm gaining weight. Well, why am I gaining weight? And so then I wanted to get off the weight because now I started implementing the same things that I did before, and now that's not working. And I don't have time to cook, and I don't have time to take care of myself. And all of these things are happening, and my bucket is overloading with stress. And my husband's like, let's find you a meal plan. This was his solution. Let's find you a meal plan where you can like order food and it'll just come, and then you won't have to cook and you'll be eating healthy things. And I said, great, you want to do that for me? Please. So he started Googling, and that's actually, he found you.
Oh, that's so funny.
So he found you because he kept showing me meal plans, and I'm like, well, there's way too many carbs in that meal. I knew enough that I should not be eating the amount of grains and things that were in the carbs. And then when he Googles it, I'm like, well, this isn't a meal plan. But then I started reading, and I said to him, I'm going to do this because I need to do something, and nothing is working. Nothing is getting better. No one is telling me what to do. And I have nothing to lose. Let me try this. And you know, that was March 1st.
And I love this because we were talking before we started recording this, but you said to me when we first talking, you're like, I'm a real A-type personality. I am, you know, and just now when we're talking about it, you're like, and that, you know, that shows up in even the fact that I joined on March the 1st, because it was a clean thing, right? I'm starting on the 1st of the month, and this is going to be an 8 to 12 week program. And then by, you know, 3 months time, I'm going to be fixed and I'll be able to go back to living my life the way that I am, but just a bit more in control.
Right.
And it didn't work out that way, did it?
Right. And the universe didn't agree with my plan. So about, you know, it worked out. So the first week, everything is going great. I have my why. I want to feel whole. And then, you know, the second week, I implement the high protein breakfast, which I think was the most impactful thing that I've done. Mm. I have had hangry attacks, and I've snacked since I was a teenager. I have never not been hangry. In fact, it's a joke in my household that we're not allowed to go anywhere unless there's a snack in my bag. Like, because, you know, I have just raged. Like, where we've gone on vacations, and at 8 a.m. when we're having breakfast, I'm like, where are we having lunch? Because we're going to get to that point, and I'm going to get angry. So please tell me when we're having lunch so that we could be somewhere where we could be having lunch at a restaurant wherever we are on vacation.
And it's so debilitating, right? I think that a lot of people don't realize what it feels like. It's a big joke. And yes, I joke about this now, and it is kind of funny. But actually, when you're in it, it's not a joke. Like, it is that feeling of, I can't think, I can't do anything until I get some food, because what's actually happening in your body is your blood sugar is so low that your body is going, we're shutting down systems until we can get higher blood sugar. And it is a horrible feeling. You start feeling shaky and jittery, and your body is like actually driving you to find food wherever you can. So that's why you get so hangry, angry. It's
it's not within our control. And to be relieved of that now, and actually, you know, for you, how does that feel to not have to have that now?
So freeing. I absolutely hated cooking. My husband is the cook, because I couldn't cook a meal because I was so hungry. Like, I didn't have the patience to make a meal because I needed to be eating immediately.
Yeah.
So I didn't have 30 minutes to prep food. Like, that's, I literally hated cooking. So now I'm just calmer. I'm actually enjoying trying to make things and following different recipes and seeing what I could make. And, you know, I have to cook. My son has over a dozen food allergies, so that is a different challenge in my life. But I have to cook for him. And before, I literally wouldn't. We would cook everything on Sunday, and I would make sure I did it in the morning after breakfast so that it was not an issue. It was really like I couldn't function, and nobody understood that. I felt so validated when I heard and that stopped. I almost jumped up for joy, and I said to him, I didn't snack the last 3 days. I would have a mid-morning snack. I would go to work and pack a mid-morning snack. Like, I would even try to be healthy about it and do like an apple and some raw almonds. Mm-hmm. But still, obviously that was the wrong thing, and I know that now. But I can now last about 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah.
So it's amazing. So that was the first, so impactful. And it's like nothing. The other thing is the cravings, the sugar cravings have gone. I used to look at a menu at a restaurant and I would immediately flip to the dessert section to see what they had. And I would plan my meal around what the dessert was. So I'm really just so happy and just feel so content that I don't live around that. I don't live around the carbs. Like, if my husband's eating a slice of pizza, I can control myself. You know, I can have things in the house that I don't need to eat, and I'm not tempted to eat them anymore. And it feels freeing. It feels like I'm not, you know, in handcuffs with food and sugar and these cravings that were insane. Now I understand kind of maybe what like a smoker felt like when they didn't have cigarettes. It's an addiction.
Mm. It feels like an addiction, doesn't it? Because it's that, has that much power over you. And yes. I actually don't think it's an addiction. I think it's a physiological response to that low blood sugar and your blood sugar just being on and up and down. And this is why, you know, there is no scientific validation that sugar addiction is an addiction. And I think it's probably not. It does hit the same similar receptors in your brain, but I think it's more just that fit, like that driver from your body being like, okay, your blood sugar's too low. This is how I know is going to get it up as quickly as possible. So this is what I'm going to make you seek out and find, because I know that you can get your hands on it and it's going to be the quickest way to get your blood sugar back up, and the most, you know, the most effective and efficient way. And that's why it's so validating, as you said, hearing other people and then going through the process of being like, wow, I don't feel like this anymore. This isn't just me. It isn't that I have some sort of lack of self, you know, control or willpower. This is what was happening inside my body that was leading me to do that. And now my willpower hasn't changed. And yet my hangry attacks have stopped and my sugar cravings have stopped. So it's just that complete validation that this wasn't me. Like people were saying, it's just you, you know, and you know, especially those, not like you, but others listening to this that have had, you know, weight gain as a symptom of their PCOS, and where they might be thinking, oh, well, that's just me and the sugar and all, you know, that is causing me to have that weight gain. And it's like, well, often this is not within your control at the moment. And it's about changing. But when you do, as you said, when you change sort of from the start of the day what you're eating, it has a massive impact on what you feel like later in the day.
Yeah, it was such a game changer. So I was feeling so good, and then COVID hit. And then my world turned upside down. And then my plan went out the window, and now I have not 1 minute to myself, because my husband is home, my 5 and my 2-year-old are home, I'm home, we're working full time, we have to somehow entertain them, we can't leave, we're sort of on lockdown other than like our backyard, and how am I going to function? I can't do anything. And I started to go a little crazy. And, you know, so I like to keep up with your modules. So that was, of course, my type A craziness as well, that, well, no, I'm behind. Like, mm-hmm. I'm 5 days behind, and I'm starting to feel panicky that I need to stay on them. And then I started stressing about, well, then I got to the sleep part, which I've never been a good sleeper since probably my late 20s. I could get to sleep, but I couldn't fall asleep. Mm. And I started trying to implement all of that, but, you know, it's the stress. And the insulin resistance was definitely my primary, you know, root cause. But the stress management, I realized, was such a close second. That adrenal fatigue was such a close second that I started to go back and look at your modules for the other types so that I could start to do the stress management. And then that started to stress me out too. And I didn't, and you know, that one day, and the way I would keep up is, the only way I could keep up is when I would leave the house for a walk. And I did that often, either because I just had to get out of the house, mm-hmm. or because I started to wake up earlier than everybody else to get an hour to myself to do anything. So then my kind of day started out like, okay, well, I'll get up at 6 because I can't sleep anyway. And then I'll have my cup of coffee. And that was before I got rid of the coffee. And I'll watch a module, and it's quiet, and I can do what I need to do. And so then I went on this walk, and I listened, you know, to this podcast of this woman, Michelle, who you had interviewed. And she was talking about, you know, how she is a type A person, and she has a toddler, and with work, and how everything needed to be done. And I was like, aha. I'm like, yes. And just the night before, you had had one of your Q&A sessions that I joined. And I said to you, I'm having a hard time with this. Like, I can't keep up. And both you and Raj and you guys were so nice about it and so relaxed and said, look, if you need to hit pause for 2 months, then just do it. We'll come back to it. You can come back to it. And I felt relieved. And I went to bed that night, and I felt relieved that you gave me permission to, you know, to not be perfect at that moment, to not do it as the plan that I had in my head. And when I went for a walk the next morning and listened to Michelle's podcast, I thought, you know what? Why do I need the 2 month break? So it's not going to be what I envisioned. Life is not what I envisioned, and it certainly just keeps throwing you curveballs. But this is working for me, and I need to find time for me. And if it's just an hour and that's all I'm getting, then that's all I'm getting. And if I'm not able to work out, you know, and do the strength training, which I'm still not, by the way, that's still one of my goals that I'm working on, then so be it. But I can implement, you know, but my focus is implementing the meals, because that I can do, implementing the sleep, because that I can do. And I'll take this a little bit at a time. And I've gone through there, and I did manage to finish in the modules in a longer period of time. And I managed to prioritize, but I feel okay about it. Yeah. You know, it's been 5 months, and I'm certainly not there. I'm certainly not perfect, but I've made progress. And the progress wasn't even so visible because it was in such small increments. But when you look back, you're like, oh yeah, I slept almost every night this week. I didn't get up in the middle of the night, or I didn't snack this entire week. Or, you know, I just had my period and the last 2 weeks weren't that bad. And you don't really notice it until you move forward and you look backwards. And I was that was really powerful for me to see that progress.
And also to realize that you don't have to be perfect for, you know, you can just implement some quite small changes and they can have quite a big impact on your life. And this is where I think that perfectionism is a really, it's almost a negative thing when it comes to health and wellness, right? Like, you know, perfectionism can be such a blessing in things like, you know, excelling at sport and in many other areas of life. But I think when it comes to health and wellness, it can be really detrimental. And we need to realize that we're probably never going to achieve perfectionism. And if we are, then it's probably having an effect on another part of our life. Like, if we're so perfect in what we're eating and how we're moving, that it's probably affecting our family and, you know, and our social life. And and actually that ability to draw on the things, pick and choose the things that work for us. Like we, like you've said, you know, going through, hey, here are the modules that I think are most relevant to you with insulin, but actually you pick and choose these, right? Like you pick and choose which ones you want to implement, and you don't have to implement them all. You don't have to implement them in 12 weeks. You don't even have to implement them in a year. Do the kind of one or two things that you think are most important. And then if you want to come back later and implement something else, by all means, go for it. But you don't have to. It's just the knowledge is power. And if you have that knowledge, you can go, great, I might draw on that later. But actually, I just don't have the capacity at the moment to, say, do some strength training. Not a big thing, because you know that you've already improved so much about your lifestyle without doing that, that it's not an essential for you. If you want to go on further later and just, you know, if you get more time when the kids are at school and you want to start doing some more exercising then you know what to go for. But it doesn't mean that it's like a, you know, you're getting out, you're being active, you're getting it where you can, but it doesn't mean that you need to be dedicating, you know, an hour a day to going to the gym and doing some strength training.
Right. I mean, I think that what I learned is there's another phrase that you had said that I remembered and I had kind of an aha moment. It was during one of your modules when you said, you know, reframe how you're thinking. And instead of saying, I have to do something, I get to do it. Mm. And that really stuck with me too, because, you know, when we do things and we feel like they're chores and then they get harder, but I have to do it. I have to do it. I have to do it. And then if you take that pressure off by saying, well, I get to do this, and you reframe it. And I start to do that now, even with my kids, like I get to play with them. I get to be home with them. I get to be home with my husband, even though it's COVID, you know, and he would normally not be coming home till 8 o'clock at night from the city on the train. It's very empowering to feel good about yourself and feel that you have, that you're doing something to make your life whole, to make your life better. And that, you know, it's my own fault, because on March 1st, I set the script and then I realized, well, nobody's putting me up to this except for me. Mm. So I need to relax about it.
Yeah. And this is your whole life, right? Like you've been living with these symptoms for, you know, you were only diagnosed at 37, you know, you've been living with these symptoms for, you know, 30, 40 plus years. And it doesn't mean that everything needs to be fixed in 12 weeks. And it's, and as you said, it's an unrealistic expectation to think that we're going to be able to identify every kind of thing that's going on and then address that in, you know, in 12 weeks. And we are just setting ourselves up for failure if we do expect that. And actually we're far better off setting an expectation of, okay, I'm going to identify, you know, one or two or three things that are going to have, you know, the biggest impact on my, you know, some of my symptoms, like my hangry attacks and sugar cravings. And if I can even just achieve that, then it's been an incredible 12 weeks, right? Like I've lived with these symptoms for 30 plus years. You know, I started getting these hangry attacks and stuff when I was 11. So, you know, I have been dealing with that for most of my life. If I can achieve, you know, a resolution for that in 12 weeks, wow, that's phenomenal.
Yes.
And then build on from that and be like, right, okay, so, you know, for the next 12 weeks, maybe I, you know, as you said, it's like, well, my sleep's never been great. It is good now, but maybe I focus on that and that's the one thing. Or maybe that's not achievable during COVID. Or maybe it is because you've got more time at home. So kind of picking those one or two things that you're working on and picking and choosing what you think works for you, because, you know, you soon get feedback from your body about what's working. Sometimes it can take a little bit longer, but often you do get that quick feedback, like you did with the dairy and the acne. You know, I say to a lot of people, if they've got acne, you know, removing dairy, just do it for 2 months, see how you go, add it back in. If it doesn't improve your acne, then it probably won't. But if it does, you've found your thing, likely. Right. Maybe you might be able to tolerate a little bit later on, but pretty much, you know, like at least you know. And as you saw, you know, that was just, you know, remarkable for your symptoms.
It was like that was a side benefit, because I was doing it more for trying to get pregnant, you know, just, okay, I'm going to throw everything at trying to get pregnant when I did. And that was like, oh, my acne cleared up and that's it. And it was such a correlated effect that it just could not have been anything else.
And it's not.
It was amazing. We see
this all the time clinically. And I'm not a big believer in all women with PCOS removing dairy. I think that it can be really helpful for some women, but it's not necessary for all women. But I think for anyone that's struggled with acne, it can be a really good thing to at least try for a couple of months.
Yeah.
At least the sort of, especially the low fat dairy, you know, some can tolerate higher fat sources like butter and hard cheeses, but a lot of it's the low fat dairy because it's quite insulin stimulating. And most women with, you know, up to 80% like you and I have some insulin issues, and that's really what can stimulate that. But yeah, really amazing. And really it's, again, it's about figuring out what works for you and what makes the biggest difference for you. And I'm so glad that you found some of those big things that have had the biggest impact on you.
Absolutely.
So is there anything else that you have done or that you thought was, you know, would be really helpful for other women listening to this that were in a similar position to what you were, you know, when you were diagnosed at 37?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, there was some, one of the things, I guess, so going through this protocol and, you know, listening to your podcast and listening to the Q&A and the, you know, I got really interested in the concept of functional medicine. So I have found kind of a local functional medicine practitioner. It even got me just excited about learning more about my body and what is going on and what do I need to do holistically. Because again, it clicks for me when you say you're not going to see all the changes in 6 months or maybe not even a year or maybe longer because it takes so long. You know, I put that scale in the closet when you told us to at the beginning of the protocol. I had to take it out at about 3 months because I had this appointment and she needed to know how much I weighed. So I did take it out to weigh myself and I only lost 3 pounds. Now I had gained about 7 from the time that the last 7. And I took, and I didn't, and I said, you know what? My clothes are okay. They fit again. They're loose. So I don't care that I only lost 3 pounds. It felt good. And then in the next month, I lost another 4. Now I wasn't doing anything remarkably different from that month to this month. But like you said, your body is obviously needs whatever time it needs to start alleviating those symptoms. So, you know, the hangry attacks, the skin issues, the sleep has gotten a lot better. My energy levels are better. I was also a little resistant on the supplements in the beginning because I could not choke down a supplement. Mm-hmm. I did even try popping them open and mixing them in yogurt, and that was quite disgusting. So I decided to go back to swallowing them. But then I did finally get on all the supplements, and the magnesium, I think, was another game changer for me that, you know, had I started it earlier, probably would have seen an effect maybe with my sleep and stress levels earlier.
And but, your mood as well, right? I remember you saying that your mood was quite a lot different.
Absolutely. Because, you know, you wake up every day and you're like, is this life? Is this life waking up feeling cranky and you know, angry and frustrated and annoyed at everything all the time? Like, I know that you're more exhausted, you're more tired with kids, but I'm like, this can't be what everybody feels, and they're just not saying it. It just can't be like this. So yeah, of course there's a certain element of stress that happens for a variety of reasons, and your mood's going to go up and down based on that. But I remember asking you, like, well, what happens during those 10 days before your period? Because something isn't right. And then fast forward another month, and then fast forward another month, and I don't get those mood swings as much anymore. I might get a little, but I would, you know, my OB had said, well, like, that's PMDD. You know, that's, I forget what it stands for.
Premenstrual dysmorphic disorder. It's basically a serious form of PMS.
Right. But that has somewhat resolved. So I think kind of what I'm left with at the moment is Of course, my energy could always be slightly better. I'm not bouncing off the walls. My sleep is pretty good. And the hair thinning is still a little bit there, still finding, you know, but so much, I've gained so many positive things, and I'm just really excited to keep learning more. And I think my takeaway, or, you know, if a message for anyone who really listens to this, is don't quit. Mm. Give it a shot. And even if you haven't implemented as much as you think you should have, lower your expectations and just do one thing, because this is something that you're going to need to figure out long term. And just take your time with it and explore it, and, you know, do one thing at a time, and you'll continue to feel better. And there's nothing better than seeing results, even when they're incremental.
Absolutely. And just having that, resetting that expectation that when you're changing your health and lifestyle, there is no such thing as perfection, right? And actually, right, you know, being like, it's okay to be a bit mediocre in this. Okay, that's, yes, actually, this is the time when you do want to be a little bit, give yourself that grace, be an 80-20 person. That this is, right, the time when you want that. And, you know, while I said there's, you know, many other parts of your life that it's amazing being a perfectionist, this isn't one of them. And actually, we have to relearn that 80-20 is a good thing. 80-20 is actually really good in so many places in our life, and this is yeah, really one of those. So thank you so much for your wise words, Helen, and sharing your story. It takes so much courage to come and share what's been going on, and also a lot of reflection to look back and go, wow. And it's quite emotional, don't you think, looking back and being like, I suffered, yeah, with that for so many years.
It is. And, you know, I looked back, and at first, you know, I was sad about it, because I'm like, well, how different could so many things in my life could have been had I had that earlier diagnosis, had I had the opportunity to make those changes. I know that even if I had done these things maybe a year or two before I started trying to get pregnant, I probably would not have needed IVF. Mm-hmm. I probably could have done it naturally. I know that. But it is what it is.
Yeah.
And you have to move on from that. So I just hope that, you know, that one thing of, and that's what I guess got me kind of off the wagon, is that at that time I was looking from such a different lens and my goal was so different. And I thought, oh, well, I'll just get through this. And once I get pregnant and have that baby, then I'm okay and I can slip here and I can slip there. But you really can't. You really can't, because that's not taking care of yourself. And it's not, you know, I kept thinking of you saying progress, not perfection. And, you know, during the modules, there's so many like little aha moments, because things become habit. And when they become habit, they become easy and they just become part of your life. And there's so many things that I've implemented that I don't even think twice about now. Like those supplements, I take them every day. I think I have about 20 pills, but they all get taken every day. And I don't even think twice about it, because it's now become habitual. And I, you know, and everything is kind of a cycle and feeds into the next. And if you can just pick one thing to start with and make that a habit, then it'll feed into the next and the next, and you'll just feel better. And so when I look at it that way, I think, you know, I don't know what I would have been like if I had started it before, but I'm happy where I am now.
Yeah.
And that's important.
That's all we can do, right? Is go there. Is you can't go back in time. So all we have to do is go with what we've got at the moment and be grateful that we've figured out a lot of the stuff that's going on with our body. And move forward. So thank you so much for that, Helen. That is so kind of you to come on and join me and share your story, and all the very best for the next phase in kind of figuring, you know, everything out going forward.
Thank you so much, Claire. This has been really an amazing journey. And I'm so glad that I found your protocol. So thank you.
My pleasure.
So that's it from Helen and I this week. Thank you so much for joining us, listening. And I hope that Helen's story resonated with many of you out there. Maybe those of you who are mums or moms and really suffering from that extreme fatigue, and now understanding that there is often a really strong root cause that's not just lack of sleep and someone demanding your time all the time. And actually that can be improved in so many cases. And why not, right? Why live the next 20 years exhausted when you don't have to?
So if you want to know more about how to find that out for you, then like Helen, come and join us in the PCOS protocol. As I said before, it's exactly the same way I treat my one-on-one woman. It is finding out what that root cause is and then putting in the most important steps to address that. So if you want to know more, head to thepcosnutritionist.com/thepcosprotocol or just hit program from the main menu. Thanks again and catch you next week. Now stand by for our disclaimer. The information contained in this podcast has been prepared for the purpose of providing information, including about the PCOS Nutritionist products and services, and is designed to support clients' overall wellness. It is not intended to provide medical advice or designed to rectify, treat, or cure any specific medical conditions or diseases. Nothing stated or shared in our podcast is intended to be and must not be taken to be medical advice. Please seek the advice of professionals as appropriate regarding the evaluation of any specific information, opinion, advice, or content contained in our podcast.